computer. This is Data.
I'm an android. I'm a
Rangers League basketball.
I was processing all of the information.
Processing.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Rangers League basketball.
Analytics was crap.
Does not compute.
Just because you got good stats doesn't mean you're a good team.
Welcome, everyone, to another Lakers Exceptionalism podcast. I am hosting for the day. I'm Tim. You know me as Krangis McBasketball on Twitter. And with me, I have a small panel of Tom Z joining us as always. And then we are joined today by Alex Regla, who you may know from tweeting out WWE or I'm going to mix up some sort of wrestling or fighting gifs and writing on Twitter, doing great work over at the Lakers SB Nation site and writing some of his own stuff as well. Is that all correct? Am I up to speed on everything?
It's AEW, not WWE.
AEW. So,
yeah, okay. You got to get that right. you're gonna make me use my street cred on here. But yeah, everything else is spot on.
All right, perfect. Today, I'm going to be straight with everyone. The Dodgers are playing right now, and I don't care at all, but these two people do. So we're going to just, you know, get some quick hitters, and the Lakers have played one game so far this season. They lost. It looked a bit ugly. There were a lot of injuries contributing to some of the lineups we saw, some of the challenges we saw. But there were some things that heading into the year we were concerned about, kind of hopeful wouldn't be the case, but ended up being the case. So we're going to go through and just play a little game of, is Tim overreacting or not? Now, I don't truly believe every one of these statements I'm going to share, but I put together a list of statements that could be considered overreactions, and I'm going to just get the thoughts from each of you, whether you think it's an overreaction or not, and why. So off the start, we will go with, I'm just going to look through some random ones here. Let's go to my bold prediction on the year. One of my bold predictions is to say Kent Bazemore is now the team's fourth most important player, and he's going to get the fourth most minutes this year. The thinking here is there's not a lot of defense on this team, especially right now, and he's one of the few guys that's not a star that the Lakers can rely upon. Alex, what are your thoughts?
I think I agree. I think heading into the year, I probably would have said maybe THT, not just because, you know, he'd be the fourth highest paid player, you know, all that good stuff. But after just one game and watching the preseason, I think it's pretty clear that Bazemore is probably gonna be a guy that the team really counts on and is like needs him to be healthy more than almost any other player. If nothing else, his size on the wing, his defense has been, I think, a little better than I thought it would be. I mean, I haven't watched a lot of Warriors film of him last year, but he looks solid. Like I've been impressed with like his defense at the point of attack, especially against a guy like Steph Curry in that first game. So I think that's pretty valid. Like if he goes down, I think it's harder to replace him than a guy like THT, for example.
Mm-hmm. Tom, what are your thoughts?
I mostly agree. I do think there is a small case to be made for Kendrick Nunn becoming an extremely important closing lineup player, but it would be kind of under different circumstances. You know, I think him in shooting the ball, if Bazemore does end up struggling, despite the defensive strengths he's brought to the team so far, playing Steph Curry great. You know, if I'm doing a left con, I'm a little bit sad panda on this one.
Okay. Thank you. Alex, are you familiar with our scoring system here?
Yeah, you gave me a little like heads up on that. Based on that, yeah. So you said it can be like an emoji, an animal or something, so right?
It can be whatever you want, and we're not gonna, there's no scoring, no real scoring scale. Like it can be like a AEW, if I'm getting the letters right.
Yeah.
Moment or something as well.
Maybe like a shrug emoji. I don't know. I think that's gonna be my answer for almost all of these. Like I think at this point it's still hard to like,
yeah,
like nail down something like after one game. But I think there are hints that like, you know what, this guy's probably gonna be more important than we thought he would be.
Yeah. It's hard to have hardline stances right now.
Yeah.
Speaking of hardline stances, the next one, Malik Monk, his defense is so bad, he should not be in the normal rotation once Wayne Ellington, Kendrick Nunn are back. Yes or no? We'll start with Tom.
I mean, Wayne Ellington's not great. So, you know, to me, there's a difference in kind of what Malik Monk brings, at least on the offensive creation side. If you need it, I don't see this team really needing it that that much, unless he's shooting lights out like the preseason. And Ellington, we saw him struggle. And if Ellington gets the Lakers curse and Monk is able to shake off that shooting curse, I feel a lot better about Monk being able to at least provide some consistent shooting. I guess just don't play him with Melo, right, Tim?
Yeah, I think that will be a part of it. It's he has weaknesses, but when you build weaknesses on weaknesses with some of these lineups, it just gets really bad really fast. You can spread out some of these guys on different lineups and it can be okay. Alex, going to you. Malik Monk, should he be benched as soon as the health is there to allow it?
No, but I agree. The defense is worrisome. Another guy, like, that was his reputation coming in when he came into the Lakers. Like, just, he's a microwave scorer and all that good stuff, but his defense, that's something you got to look out for. And yeah, there was a few plays against the Warriors there. I was like, whoa, sheesh. I don't know what he's doing out there. But yeah, but I think Tom brought up a good point that, like, Ellington's not that much better, although, like, he's okay at some stuff, I guess. But yeah, it all depends on who you play him with. Like you said, like, if it's going to be him, Rondo, Melo, and Russ, maybe all out there at the same time, it's just going to be problematic. So they're going to need his shooting if it's legit. And if it was what we saw last year with Charlotte was legit, I think that dynamism he has on the floor is going to be something they're going to need at different points. And I don't think we can rule him out just because of the defense, but I'm sure Vogel, of all people, is going to keep like a really careful eye on him and going to pull him the second it's just a problem.
Okay. More shrugs on this one, or what are our LeftCon levels? Forgot to ask.
Oh man. I'm not super worried. Yeah. Again, with Alex, none of these are going to be, it's all going to be middle ground, I think. I mean, I would, if anywhere, I'd lean more toward like two, because yeah, I think this is who he is as a player. But there, you know, it's one game. And I think there's some lineups where he's going to be able to take advantage in second unit guys across the league and be able to succeed.
I'm probably in the middle. Like, I as long as he's supported by the right pieces, I think he'll be okay. But like, come playoffs, I can see, yeah, he might be out of the rotation probably altogether. Mm-hmm. They're going to hunt him. I'm pretty clear about that. Yeah.
So whatever the scale is, Alex is in the middle of that scale.
Yeah.
All right. Next one, similar question here. DeAndre Jordan, he's bad. He's washed. He needs his minutes limited. And as soon as we get Trevor Ariza back, which would allow Anthony Davis to play more center and less power forward, the largest result from that is going to be DeAndre Jordan becoming an emergency center rather than a rotation player. We'll start with Alex on this one.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at. After one game, I think that was all I needed really to see. Like, I don't know how it gets better is my thing. Like, I guess the matchup obviously is important. Like, Golden State is probably a horrible matchup for DJ. And I think that context is important for how he looked. But like, that opening lob, that was his only field goal attempt. He generally protect the rim, although he was helping trap Curry up top and stuff like that. So obviously he's not going to really be in the interior to come over and contest shots. So he was put in a situation where he wasn't going to look great probably against Golden State. But again, the athleticism, we can see the drop off there. And really he's just blocking. His physical body is just blocking the paint and preventing AD from playing the five. So yeah, I think if Ariza was healthy, I'd be a little shocked if DJ was still the starter is probably where I'm at.
I mean, is that what we're assuming though? Is this what we're assuming when Ariza's healthy, they're starting AD at the five? And because I don't know if they really feel like they want to keep two bigs involved throughout this regular season, just as innings eaters, because that's what they've done for 3 years.
That's a great point. And I think we all assumed, because all the reports are like, oh yeah, AD is going to play the center. Like like the Athletic from ESPN. That was the indication. I think AD himself said during media day, like, yeah, I'm planning on playing more center this year. But again, it's almost like we can believe it when we see it. And obviously they wanted to replicate something from that championship season with JaVale. And DJ is kind of like a proxy to that in a way. But yeah, I think Vogel had his hand forced here a bit. In terms of starting DJ. And if DJ doesn't start, I don't think he plays at all is the thing.
Yeah.
Like, cause if it's AD at center, you have Dwight coming in after him. I don't see DJ also getting a shift there.
No.
So it might be just a case of keeping the locker room intact. Maybe different factors probably.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Moving to the next one. Another guy I'm concerned about, Rajon Rondo. Offensively, Russell Westbrook's going to play enough that you're going to either have to play both of them together, which doesn't really seem to lean. Like, Rondo doesn't provide the kind of value offensively if he's the second point guard in a 2-point guard lineup. And then defensively, he hasn't been fantastic. My pitch here is we need some Austin Reeves time. It's time for either LeBron's out there and he can play point guard effectively when Russ isn't out there, or Russ is out there for most of the game. So take Rondo away, and I want to see some Austin Reeves minutes. I want to see some Avery Bradley minutes. Give me some of those guard guys. They don't need to be point guards. They just need to be two guards that defensively are a little bit more competent. What do you think about that, Alex?
Completely agree. I they need secondary guys, because those units, those bench units, are almost always going to have one of Russ or LeBron, especially LeBron's usually always with that bench unit. So if you already have him, Rondo becomes a little overkill. He's going to be spotting up, or he's going to be having the ball, and LeBron's going to be spotting up. And if you kind of compound that with Westbrook also being out there, you need some guys who can play off ball and also kind of make a play if the ball swung their way. We saw Austin Reeves in the preseason really do well in that. When a play or set broke down, they kind of gave it to Reeves and he kind of ran this secondary pick and roll on the side or something. And that's just something, I don't know, that I think would be really needed. Again, that Caruso comparison is just going to be obvious all year, but I think he does fill offensive concepts that Caruso did. If he screens for LeBron, he rolls into the short roll. He can make plays out of that. His shot looked okay. And if anything, just size wise, he's bigger than their other guards right now. And that can be helpful with guys like Ariza and THT out.
Yeah, there's length there, but definitely the strength, needs maybe a little bit more. He's a young guy, so it'll get there soon. Definitely. So I was paying close attention to the Stars rotation, right? So it was AD first quarter, like it's been for the last 3 years, and LeBron and Russ to start the second. But it was LeBron, Russ, Rondo, Dwight, Melo, or maybe Melo, you know what I mean, and someone else. And you see a lot of the age there with a lot of these guys not being able to compete. And it's not just one guy getting beat. It's two guys getting beat or letting a guy kind of fly by, where as a younger player would be all up, at least trying to recover and in a position to get a rebound if they happen to miss or something. And those opportunities, when you have, five guys 35 or older, it's tough. It becomes they got hurt by this injury bug. So it's really hard for me to say, when they don't have Kendrick Nunn, when they don't have THT, when they don't have Trevor Ariza, this team is very, very concerningly already hurt. I think that's the thing to worry about, instead of what the actual stuff on the court looks like, because we weren't expecting to start Rondo 6 minutes in the first quarter, I think, when we put this team together. So I don't think it's too much to worry about. I think it's, a symptom of another disease.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next one, and I think, I don't know, I'm up and down about this. I've been up and down about it all preseason. I'm hopeful, but if it doesn't go the way I want, I think the Lakers are in trouble. The preseason offensive system talk was overblown, and we're back to hero ball. We're back to simple offense, and it's really going to hurt the Lakers. I went back and I tallied up how often the Lakers posted up or isolated in that game, that first game. 44% of the offense was 1v1 that either resulted in something there or they like kicked it out and got something from that. That is crazy high. They had 14 post-ups or isolations in that first quarter alone. They were just posting up left and right after the team talked about not wanting to post up as much. I'm worried. The offensive system, it's gone away, and the Lakers are in trouble. That's the take. Tom, what do you say about that?
I think that's probably fair. I mean, again, injuries. No, we don't know what these lineups are going to look like when they're fully healthy, which hopefully happens soon, but doesn't look likely. But I mean, you already saw the freeze frame, right? With Anthony Davis in the post and three guys on him. He fucking made that shot, which is kind of hilarious. He made that insane shot. And these guys were great against Golden State, and it wasn't enough because of a few bad rotations, I think. To be perfectly fair, the Golden State is a bad matchup for DeAndre Jordan. That second half starting shift was terrible. And there was a lot of things that I feel like could have been stopped the bleeding if this wasn't game one. You know, if you're in a play-in, you'll see a lot more things and they'll get there. But I think that it is concerning to see, you know, guys 5 feet off of three of the Lakers' weak side guys.
Yeah. Before I get to Alex, in what I was thinking throughout the game was right now, the Lakers are not good. Right now, the Warriors also didn't look good. And I don't want the bar to become like, hey, just win this game. And really, it should be about getting those wins and making that progress over time. But my assumption when I've been talking about that, like, you know, be patient, progress is going to happen, is that we'd see them continue using the smart sets that made Russ look a lot better, made Malik Monk, made Kendrick Nunn, made these guys, you know, elevate their playmaking, elevate the scoring, create better spacing, leverage the non-shooters to screen and create more space for the shooters. Poof, it's gone. And if it's gone, even with some of these guys healthier, I don't know. Like the Lakers probably would have beaten this team. I don't know if they're going to be good enough to be a top seed in the West. Alex, how does that make you feel?
I mean, it doesn't make me feel good. it's funny because last preseason, like when Marcus Gasol was here, we saw like the Lakers running these pin down sets. We saw them doing all this crazy fun stuff. And then once the season started, it was still there here and there, but it quickly kind of dissolved. It kind of went away and it kind of reverted back to kind of Frank Vogel's kind of rudimentary kind of offensive system. But so I kind of got a little flashback to that this first game. I do wonder how much of that was just LeBron and AD getting hot really early and them kind of falling in love with that mid-range shot. And to their credit, I mean, they made like every shot they really took and stuff like that. But that did hurt like Westbrook in particular. And I'm not sure how much of that was the spacing limitations Tom mentioned. I'm not sure if that was because they couldn't get action towards the rim because there's guys there, if DJ was in the dunker spot or whatever it was. But it is a little concerning, especially for a guy like Russ. I think you have to be more active in terms of getting him involved. And that probably means running more weak side action or doing something with him, because Frank Vogel, like there was a quote that I was there for where he said, we want him to be as aggressive off ball as he is on ball. But in order to do that, I think you have to put him in a position to do that. Or if he's making that concerted effort to cut or whatever, we didn't really see that.
Yeah, that's fair. And part of, I mean, if he's out there screening for others, I don't know if I'd categorize that as aggression, but I'd say that's, you know, him pressuring the defense in not the same way, but he's pressuring the defense off ball the same, you know, in the same sense that he can pressure the defense on ball. So yeah, this will be an interesting one to track, because I think it truly does swing my outlook on this team by a really fair margin. All right, moving to the next one. I don't think the scoring possession data quite bore this out, but the overreaction I'm going to take from this first game is LeBron, you know, he hit pretty much everything. He wasn't getting to the rim well. AD was hitting everything, and he looked like bubble AD, and he might be the new center for this offense. We're posting up a bunch. This plays well into his hands. I don't think ball screens are going to do a whole lot because defenses are going under. They're sagging off of guys. Is AD the new center of the offense, or am I overreacting? Tom, why don't we start with you?
You know, I don't think you're overreacting. It was a lot, and it was a lot of pick and roll as well. A lot of him getting in space and getting a lob opportunity or some kind of putback. It was great. He looked fantastic. He's firing like very quickly on his outside jumpers, which they haven't fallen, but I like the confidence. I like the ability to step into it and say, no, I'm taking the shot right now. Not a hesitation or a little bit of a jab step. He's jumping into it, and hopefully the results follow because he's got some confidence coming, but it does really look like that. Just like seeing Russ to operate only in kind of this facilitator mode, you know, as delivering Braun the ball in some off-ball situations was promising. And that's the kind of stuff where, you know, if LeBron can just catch the ball and make one or two moves or make a decision, it's going to go well for the offense. If he catches a ball within like a small advantage, right? He just has to create that advantage. I think him creating it on ball is more difficult than it used to be for him, clearly. And having Russ in those situations as somebody who can fire a pass in, really have good timing with someone, I think that's really, really good. But I think still, yeah, AD is probably going to get more than Braun. Like it's probably the case.
Yeah, I think I agree with Tom. I kind of go back and forth, not even with LeBron, but I wonder if Westbrook himself needs to be the center, because if he's not the center of the offense, I do wonder then what his value on the offensive end is really. Like, he's not a spot up threat. We just said, he's not cutting that often. And I'm not really sure the pressure he's going to put on the defense if he's not the center of the offense. But this, and if he is the center of the offense, that doesn't mean like AD and LeBron aren't going to get touches. Like, I think Westbrook will facilitate for both those guys. So I think realistically AD will be the center, and they'll run a lot of action and a lot of the usage will go his way, or he's going to be the finisher, or he's going to be the initiator of it, like the offense. But I have concerns what that means if Westbrook isn't the center. Like I think he needs to be more of a focal point than not, like a third. I don't think he could be just the third option on this team for it to work.
Yeah. That's the key part of this, is it's really easy to have him not do anything. I don't know that that's going to lead to success for this team. And if
AD has to play more five, there's no chance he can carry the five and be everywhere and be the center on offense. So maybe that's for the better, pushing that team to where it really needs to be in the circumstances. Sorry to interrupt you.
Also, I wonder, is it easier for AD and LeBron to adjust to Westbrook than Westbrook adjusting to LeBron and AD? Like, I think their skill sets will almost fit any player. For Westbrook, you need guys to like work around him or change their games to fit him. Like, the whole talk was, oh, Westbrook's gonna change this and that to fit in with those guys. I don't know how realistic that is, or at least how his skill set kind of presents that, like, to make it that actually easy or like applicable. But where AD and LeBron, like, I think they can mold themselves to work around his skill set better. But again, we need like another 20 game sample to see how that looks.
Right. very logical, well-informed takes from both of you. Apparently, I wasn't overreacting enough because I think you both agreed with just about everything I said. I'll go a step further. This will be the most overreacty one. And again, these statements may not truly reflect my feelings, but Russell Westbrook on this Lakers team is going to be a disaster and a negative impact player on the defensive end, and offensively, team's not going to use him smart enough to the point where it's actively frustrating us on a daily basis and is going to be damning for this team's playoff future.
Can I just say the thing that I think encapsulates this first that we have to consider is, did you guys see that meme of like the season and Russ? And like the first half is, this is the worst basketball player I've ever seen.
That's right.
Yeah. And the second half is, this is the greatest basketball player I've ever seen, with a tiny sliver in the middle that's just, oh, like, oh. So I think we want to see what he ended up. He ended up with a pretty great season at the end of Washington, getting them into the playoffs after a very difficult COVID season. So I just want to, sorry, I had to jump in and just be like, this is what Russ does. So he's like, he's going to be fine. It'll be fine.
But he looks like, it looks bad. It looks really,
of course it looks bad.
The thing about the count, the thing about the meme though, Tom, is you were creating a cop out for the next like 4 months. And that's not, that
doesn't
can't
mean
work.
It's not true.
Alex, your turn.
Well, I mean, we can just think like Tim Legler and say, oh, just bring him off the bench. It'll solve everything. But I don't think he's going to be a disaster, but I think it's going to be a big work in progress that probably lasts the entire season, honestly, to prep for the playoffs. But yeah, I think it's going to take a lot of kind of each star, like, there was this great quote where they said that, I think it was during the practice, I forgot where, but they said that each of them have talked about what to do when the other one has the ball. So like, if AD has the ball, what are LeBron and Russ supposed to do in those circumstances? And again, the first game we saw it just stand around, you know, like, yep, if one of the guys has the ball, let them do that and you'll take your turn later. But I think learning each of their own like spots on the floor when the other one has the ball, what to do, when to cut here, when to spot up, when to screen for this guy, that's gonna be really important. And I think for Russ, for fans, Laker fans especially, he's not going to be the most efficient player. He's probably not even gonna be league average really in a lot of things, but I think like his physicality, like the non-box score stuff, is going to stick out. How he approaches the game, how he kind of puts his fingerprints on the game, I think that was the most disappointing thing about that first game. It wasn't the missed shots or the cramped paint or any of that. It just felt like he wasn't out there. And for Russell Westbrook, like, even when he's struggling, when he's out there, he's doing something. And that game, I think that was like really the most quiet Russell Westbrook performance I've seen in a long time. So if he's not being felt, like, even if he's turning it over, struggling, he's at least trying, and the defense has to kind of respect him for that, or at least kind of be aware, oh, that's Westbrook over there driving to the paint. But if they're almost just like, he's a non-factor, I think that's where issues can definitely arise. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's all preseason, all offseason, it was this guy, you know, his facilitating, his playmaking, it's going to really help. In order to do that, you need to compromise the defense. Mm-hmm. And if he's struggling to do that 1v1, that's a huge chunk of his playmaking that won't be there. If defenses are smarter against him and ball screens are just going under back and forth and he can't get downhill, same thing. So it's going to be potentially a big challenge. So I think that, I don't know, I'm hoping what Tom's talking about is true with, you know, that second half surge coming, but that might mean we're in for some rough ones over these next couple of weeks. So, you know, big picture. So I asked 7 things, and in 7 of them, we've benched 3 players. The offense has gone to shit, and a minimum contract player is our 4th best player. Big picture, if you had to give me a left con level, don't feel too bad. The Dodgers just took the lead. What's your big picture left con for me right now, Tom?
I mean, this team is going to be so impossible to judge for a couple months because things are changing every single second of every game. And I'm a little worried still, just because I came in a little worried about the Russell Westbrook fit in the playoffs and wondering what that could look like. But I still think Alex made a great point about them fitting around him. eventually we might see that if it starts going really badly for a long time. And I don't think that's the worst. And I have no idea how good that team is. It's probably pretty good.
Okay.
I still think that the team's going to be really good, especially in the regular season. I think they're going to rack up a lot of wins. And I do have like maybe long-term some concerns about the roster as currently constructed. Like I would be surprised if this is the roster that goes into the postseason. I bet there's going to be some buyout guys. I would kind of hope maybe some of those guards are consolidated to a trade for like a wing or a bigger forward or something like that. And so I'm sure there's going to be tinkering here and there to make things fit a little better. But I think definitely during this season, I think they're going to figure some things out, at least to like overwhelm other teams and stuff like that. But yeah, some roster fit concerns, some size concerns. The guards are smaller, I think, than I originally had assumed they were. The defense, there's a lot of times like there's two or three guys out there that I'm just not comfortable with being out there. Like, shoot, like, I don't think this lineup's going to work type stuff. And I really hope, like, this is my biggest hope, is that what we saw in game one, the rotation choices, the combinations, was simply just due to injuries. And it wasn't something Vogel likes or has a preference for. Because if there's one thing about Vogel, he likes to stick with rotations for a while. Like, he wants to give those rotations a chance. So hopefully that doesn't come back and bite them.
Neither of you gave me a LeFcon answer, but you gave me really thoughtful,
I'm Fuchsia.
Fuchsia, oh. I'm going to Google Fuchsia real quick. That's like a purple, right? I don't know how to spell this word.
I think I'm like a forest green, just kind of like mellow. Mm. But there's some like clouds in the distance to be weary about if you're going to go on a hike or something. I think that's where I'm at.
That's good. Okay. Completely like balanced views. Yeah. One side optimist, one side slightly pessimist.
Yeah, I like those answers. I think we're not at this point yet, but if these concerns continue to manifest and a month from now we're asking these same questions, we're approaching a scenario where it's like, oh, you know what? The Dodgers are down 3-1. We've come back from it before. We've beaten the Braves 3-1 before, or down 3-1 before, but it's still not a good situation. And the only way this works is if things change. And we need to start seeing some of that progress to give us a sign of give us some signs of life, which again, we're not close to that. This is overreacting after one game. We're big picture. I think things will be okay, but we've got a lot to think about. And before we head out of here, before I let you guys go, Tom and I, we did our pod talking bald predictions. Alex, I asked you to come today with your one big bald prediction for us today. What do you have for us?
My bold prediction, it's one that I really hope comes true. I think Austin Reaves becomes a consistent part of the rotation. Like I think injuries probably do play a factor in that for him getting that role, but I think he's just going to force his hand when he's out there and do too much good stuff for Vogel not to include him every game. I think he's going to be maybe a top 8-9 guy in this rotation by the end of the year.
Okay. That would be great.
Sure. Dude. I mean, that means they hit a home run with him. But yeah, I think his skill set is just something this team doesn't have in other guys.
Yeah, he's a lot of the little things that he does that I know I'm seeing on film, like all of the, just technically and from a tendency standpoint, he's doing everything right. And this is a team that have a lot of guys that tendency wise, it's almost like you're worried that you know, we get to see bad Mello, or we get to see bad Russ, or we see AD with bad habits. With Reaves, all of his habits are positive and helpful ones, it seems like, at least from what we've seen so far. And over time, when it's just like on a day-to-day basis, it's like, oh wow, on this film I just saw Reaves saved three plays in a row or something like that, even if it was little stuff that can really aggregate. And yeah, I don't know. All the signs are looking good so far. So I like that prediction. Last time we had you on this podcast, you were telling us all these great things about THT, and that dude's a stud, and that's working out well. So we've got the prospect whisperer over here, Alex Regla.
Garcia, but yeah.
but we're blessed to have a great community of lots of really brilliant Lakers personalities. Happy to have you on. We last week had Jovan joining. Next week, we've got some more names up ahead, and we're going to continue throughout the season getting some Lakers insight from all the brilliant people creating wonderful content. As we're hopping off here, Alex, is there anything you'd like to plug? I know you had an awesome piece out on Reeves that I really enjoyed. Anything else people should either check out or be on the lookout for?
Yeah, I mean, that was my last thing was on Austin Reeves. And then probably have something due on Monday. Probably going to wait until tomorrow's game and then the game over the weekend to see if anything pops up to write about. But yeah, thanks a lot for having me on. Big fan of both of you guys.
Thanks, man.
We're really spoiled, this Lakers community. There's just a ton of great people doing really cool things right now. So it's a good time to be a Laker fan.
Amen, brother.
Absolutely. Sweet. So thank you both. We'll wrap this up quickly. You guys know the spiel. Follow us, follow the pod, follow us on Twitter, follow Alex and all of his great work at the various platforms. If you like the podcast, feel free to rate and review. If you do send us a 5-star review, we can get you in that podcast Discord server that we have where people are just talking all day long and overreacting, underreacting, showing stats, highlights, memes, discussions, shit talk, all that stuff. So part of that one, our little niche of that bigger, broader Lakers community that makes the season just as fun as it is. So that's all for today. This has been the Lakers Exceptionalism Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.